I used to always be that friend who said, well, actually, you're going to have to write at some point, whether you like it or not. The way to survive in this, artistic world is getting grants, asking for grants, and you have to write those grants somehow.
This is Max Q, the podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent alum to get their take on what life is like for working artists in today's world. Multifaceted careers, time management, finances, finding balance between your work and your life. We explore that and more on the Max Q podcast. This week on Max Q, I'm speaking with Colombian musicologist and violinist Ana Uribe La. Since graduating from Peabody with a master's in musicology in 2021, Ana has been working towards a PhD at Florida State. An advocate of representing popular music genres within academia, her research is focused on Latin American contemporary genres with a particular focus on reggaeton in the U.S. As research and digitization assistant at RIPM, the Répertoire International de la Presse Musicale, Ana has prepared and indexed various renowned 20th century Latin American journals. We're excited to have her here on Max Q. Ana, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Max Q.
Thank you for having me.
I like to just start out by asking folks to tell us a little bit about what your life looks like right now.
Okay, wow. My life has been very interesting. I started my PhD in musicology at Florida State University this past fall. So actually, I'm finishing my first year, surprisingly, and I'm trying to wrap my head around that idea.
Got it. Okay. What does a musicology PhD look like? Like, what's a week in the life?
Oh God, it's a very long week. So I had the interesting task of teaching 5 days a week. Usually this does not happen for any PhD student. It just so happened to be this way this semester. But other than teaching two sections of music history, I'm currently teaching a class on American roots music. I also have my three seminars that I have to take as a PhD student. They're usually musicology focused on a specific topic whatsoever. And Florida State prides itself in that the musicologists are not only, scholars that are sitting at their desk, but they're also musicians. So I've had the opportunity to play in various different ensembles, actually. I played in the orchestra last semester, and now I'm playing in the pop ensemble, which has been very different, but pretty cool because I get to play all those pop songs that, as a kid, I really enjoyed. So it's my inner child is living very happily
now. So hearing about the amount of teaching responsibility, was that something that you were looking for when you were looking for a doctoral program?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Because I didn't really have a lot of teaching experience before. I did most of my master's during the pandemic. So the opportunities were, of course, much less. I knew that it was going to be something new to explore, and I really wanted to explore it to see if it's something that I want to pursue fully in the future. And I've enjoyed it, especially now that I've done two full semesters, or almost two full semesters of it. It's been very eye-opening. And also learning about myself. Surprisingly, I never thought that I would learn more about myself through teaching. So, yeah.
So the other thing, and I'm pulling this out of your bio a little bit, but I think you are also working for a local musicology publication.
Yes. Well, currently I'm not working just because of how international student regulations work. But I did work for RIPM, or the Retrospective Index of Musical Periodicals, for 2 years. I did it during my OPT after my master's here in Baltimore, and up until August of last year, actually. And then once my assistantship contract started with FSU, I had to stop because of amount of hours that you can and cannot work.
Right. Yes. Yes. Okay. Fascinating. So I'm kind of curious to understand a little bit more about the, how does the doctoral program kind of play into what your plans are? Are you looking to get into teaching at a university level, or are you looking more into research or publication? Kind of what is the, not that there has to be any one path, but what are you seeing in your future or potential futures?
Oh, this is something that I feel is still pretty much in the works.
Yeah.
And of course it might change in 10 years, but I, having this teaching experience, I know that it's not something that I want to devote my whole life to. Primarily, I really do enjoy research and maybe some writing in that sense. And I've had the opportunity of exploring the nonprofit world a little bit more. There was one seminar that I took last semester that was about alternative careers to musicology. And we tend to think of the musicologist as this person who's sitting at their desk, or they only teach music history, and that's about it. But there's so many other things that musicologists can do. And I think that's part of what I want to do, is to advocate for all of these other things that we can do, that any musician can do, honestly. And so I think that's kind of where I like to say that maybe I might be academia adjacent at some point, just because there's so many other like nonprofit things that I think would be really interesting for me.
You mentioned also that you still, that Florida prides itself on having its musicologists also be performers.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm kind of curious to learn a little bit more about what your path was to becoming a musicologist from, I'm guessing, starting out as a performer.
Right. That's a long story. Well, I can make
it
short.
We got some time. Yeah.
So I play violin. And I've played violin since, I think I started when I was 4 or 5. Mini-me said, oh, I would like to play the violin, out of a list of instruments. I thought that was cool. If I could go back, I wouldn't change it, but I would say, like, are you really, really sure? but I did my undergrad in violin performance, and I knew that it was not the only thing I wanted to do. As much as I really love playing violin, I didn't really just want to be a violin teacher or play in an orchestra. I had a friend who had a significant arm injury at that point.
Wow.
And that also kind of affected me thinking, oh, what if one day I cannot play or something happens? I would like to have a little bit more options.
Right.
And that's how someone suggested musicology. I had never heard musicology before. It's like, what is this? This is new. And then that's how I actually ended up here at Peabody for musicology. And it really opened a new door. I've always liked history, I should say. I should mention that. But it's a completely different thing when you're really delving into it, deep diving and learning and looking at all these aesthetic ideas and philosophical ideas. But it really opened so many doors for me that I did not expect when I first started off with the musicology path.
Can you talk through some of those doors?
let's see. I think just connecting with musicians in a different way and talking about music, not only from this very Western European idea, but all these different concepts that so many musicologists are talking about. I think the world kind of feels less small, if that makes sense. Everything is connected in some way. Mm-hmm. Again, having the opportunity to work at RIPM with the indexing and cataloging of Latin American journals also expanded my knowledge about what was happening in 20th century Latin America. Which would not have happened if I had not decided to do musicology. And then because of all of this, I ended up doing an accidental MBA, which would not have happened again if I had not started off with my musicology interest.
So how does one end up doing an accidental MBA?
So it's technically an MBA in arts innovation, mm-hmm. but, or I should say, it started off as a executive graduate certificate okay. with the Global Leaders Institute. Mm-hmm. And I just so happened to choose the year where they were doing the transition from this certificate to the MBA.
Okay, wow.
And they were like, you don't have to, but if you want to and you pay a little bit more for the actual MBA diploma, then you can get an MBA in arts innovation. I was like, oh, I don't know what I might use this for, but it would be pretty interesting. And so now I like to joke that it's an accidental MBA. It was all online, but it was pretty, again, opened up my doors to new communities of people, arts innovators, not only in music, but just arts in general from across the world. And now I feel like I have a larger network of people, not only here in the Americas, but outside elsewhere.
Right. I definitely want to come back to networking, but I feel like I'm kind of curious to hear a little bit more about like how did you go through the process of finding, applying for, getting the job at RIPM?
Well, that was when I had finished my master's here, okay. and I knew that I wanted to apply for the OPT, which is the optional practical training that you can stay in the U.S. for an extra year, do some work relating to your degree. And I was fine looking for jobs. And it was, sometimes the job market is really tough.
Right. Especially, particularly when you've got that kind of countdown clock.
Oh, of course. And especially coming out of COVID, I think it was even tougher to find more things. I just happened to stumble upon RIPM through Handshake. I'm not making this up,
okay.
but they had a post for a specific job. But then it ended up being a different job for me only because they have all of the South American 20th century journals that needed to be indexed so that they can put into their database. Mm-hmm. And I seemed to be a pretty good candidate for that. And that's really how I got it. I did an interview, pretty short interview, and the rest is me here.
Right. I think we can jump over to a little bit of the networking piece then, because it seems like that was something you were doing kind of internally here at school, and I think throughout all of the other degrees, you're talking about this kind of broadening of your networks.
Yeah.
And it seems like you have a very, very very broad-ranging set of communities that you're attached to between the business and the arts and the entrepreneurship. That there's a lot going on there. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm always curious about like how do you keep a connection with all of these people, Ooh. Right? Because I feel like that's having a broad network is great, but it's also there's a certain amount of maintenance attached to that.
Yes. I will start off by saying that that's one of the things that I'm really bad at. And I have to remind myself that I need to reach out to people and say, okay, I'm still here. What I've found, especially with a lot of my professors from here at Peabody, and even from back home in Colombia, is just updating them every once in a while. Like, hey, this is what I'm up to. Especially when I started my PhD, I sent out a few emails like, hey, I just wanted to let you know I'm starting my PhD. Thank you. Sometimes thanking people for their continuous support and just like cheering you on is enough for an email. I found sometimes they'll reply, sometimes they don't, but I know that at least I'm doing my part. For this larger MBA community, we do have a WhatsApp group and we consistently are sending each other things. If there's like a job opening or different type of events, or if someone is in town because there's people across the globe, hey, I'm visiting, it creates this small community of people online that sometimes we get the chance to see each other in person, but we know where everyone is, and so it helps when you're looking for jobs, when there's events, when something happens, there's someone relatively close by.
Got it.
Yeah.
I'm curious to hear if like there are things that you feel like, oh well, like are there things that have been possible because of, you know, these people that you've connected with across these different areas?
Well, I would say that all of my letters of recommendation come from these contacts.
Right.
And that has opened up all the, you know, doing this MBA and then my PhD. It's because I continue to have these relationships and I can ask for, you know, letters of recommendation.
I think we kind of talked through a little bit about how you got kind of from undergrad and then understanding that you were interested in musicology. Can you talk through a little bit about perhaps what, did you have expectations coming into, let's say, your master's degree about what you were going to end up doing and how things were going to work out? And did those change at all when you kind of were leaving school or leaving the master's program at least?
I think I started off with no expectations whatsoever. I was like, I don't know what is going to happen. I mean, and then a pandemic happened too. So that really, really...
That'll blow up the expectations pretty well.
Yeah. I feel like I was getting all this steam and like excitement. I was like, yes. And then halfway through my second semester, COVID. that really puts a turns down the excitement. Not really. It was still pretty fun. Yeah, I would say I just had really open expectations to what was happening. I guess I surprised myself in voicing out a lot of interest for South American, or I should say Latin American studies and focus, which sometimes you have to remove yourself from a place to actually want to talk about something. When I was back home in Colombia, I never really cared too much about Latin American music or Latin Americans outside of Latin America. And then I set foot here in Peabody. I pretty much remember my class in the Center Street building. And suddenly I was just, well, what about Latin America? But have you thought about Latin America? It's always the US, but what about Latin America? And that really took me by surprise. And to this day, I've made it my research and my research focus.
Got it. Yeah, I was going to ask a little bit about how you kind of came to your area of research focus. Is there anything more than it just kind of became apparent almost by the absence or the removal?
It really was that. Yeah. Suddenly I was talking or wanting to talk about these things. Like, I guess having a different perspective and not being around people who are always talking about it changed it for me. And what I really enjoy is more so the Latin American community outside of Latin America, because it adds something different, especially here in the US. It's a whole other thing, economically, politically, all these other factors that factor into it. I guess it was just waiting to show up in my interest. Yeah.
Right. I, thinking through this for someone who's potentially an undergrad student, potentially with some similar kind of like, I'm not sure what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
If they were considering musicology, what would be some of the things that you would say, oh, well, this might be worth exploring, or here are some great first steps to kind of start figuring out if this is something you like?
Definitely think about whether you enjoy writing and reading, because the one thing that I have to do, and I like reading, I should say, but the amount of reading that you have to do in a musicology degree, whether it's a master's program or a PhD, is abnormal in the sense of sometimes you have to learn how to read really intelligently. As much as sometimes I wish I could read every single word that I have in front of me, I just have to skim through certain things and find what's most important. So that's one thing. Know that you like reading and that reading too much will not affect your enjoyment of reading. And then the writing part is also a big one, because writing, like performing, it's never going to be perfect. There's always something that you can change, that you can improve. And so it's just knowing that it's going to always be a work in progress and that you enjoy writing again.
Got it.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you, did you seek out the program at Florida because of its emphasis on incorporating performance into the degree? And even on top of that, like what role does performance play in your life at this point?
My experience or the role of performing in my life has changed a lot, especially mm-hmm. since I started off with musicology. Mm-hmm. It was part of the reason that I wanted to apply to Florida State. I knew that it would mean I could get a chance to start performing again, because what happened with my master's was this imposter syndrome of, I'm too much of a violinist, I'm not really a musicologist, I need to focus on this a lot more, so I'm going to put my violin to the side and make sure that I can, this imposter syndrome goes away. It never goes away.
I was going to say, I wish it worked that way, man. Yeah.
That's what I thought at the very, very beginning. And then I realized, well, this is not ever going to go away, but it's okay. But the fact was that I left my violin to the side so much that I wasn't really performing. So obviously, I didn't really have that many contacts in the performing world. So with starting my PhD, I said, this is a new page for my performance. I really want to have more contacts with performing. And I've gotten more things. I got to play at the... Well, I was actually just subbing, but it was still a good opportunity to sub for the musical theater performance at FSU. They did Natasha Pier and the Great Comet of 1812. Mm-hmm. And that was a whole new experience for me. I had never played in a musical before. It had always been very classical music, especially we were playing on stage. So that adds another level of, wow. Different.
Yeah.
So it has certainly helped me rediscover the joy of performing. And like I said, I played with the University Symphony Orchestra last semester, which is the top orchestra at FSU. And I got to play a repertoire that I hadn't played in so long, a new repertoire that I thought, well, I'm never going to play because I'm not playing in an orchestra anymore. But I got the opportunity. So it's been nice to reconnect with this other side of me, other side, one of my various sides, I guess, different facets of who I am.
You mentioned the importance of writing as a musicologist. And I think that actually, I think writing is important to just about everybody in terms of being able to, it's such a medium of communication for performers too, when they're writing out grants or building proposals or anything else like that. I think it's a little underappreciated, but I would love to hear some of your thoughts on how you have grown as a writer and what you think you can bring from kind of the musicology to apply for everyone in terms of their writing.
Yes, I actually agree on this. I used to always be that friend who said, well, actually, you're going to have to write at some point, whether you like it or not. The way to survive in this, artistic world is getting grants, asking for grants, and you have to write those grants somehow. So I've definitely seen my writing change a lot since I started my master's. This was 2019. Wow. Time flies. I'm trying to think. I think being kind to yourself in the process and making sure that, again, going back to the, it's never going to be perfect, but the first step is actually trying to write something, because the page is always going to be blank unless you attempt to write. And even if you think that it looks terrible at first, by the end of the process, wherever that end process is, something better is going to be there. I think the other thing that I learned, or I fully established as a really important thing was actually during the pandemic, spending so much time alone and not having someone to read what I was writing affected my writing a lot. And now that I'm back out in this open world with more people, that really helps, because sometimes when you're writing it, you're not aware of how your sentences sound like, and then having someone else read it allows you to make sure that what you're trying to say is as clear and concise as possible. It's pretty easy to just ramble on and suddenly the idea is lost. That is a very important thing. And if not, I've recently discovered this because I say it to my students, is read out your writing out loud.
That's one of my favorite tips. Yes.
Yeah, just say it out loud, because sometimes when you say it, you're like, oh, that sounds terrible. How can I fix it? And you can fix it. Sometimes I forget, and that's okay. But those are the two things that I think really, really help. Well, three, actually. Start writing, have someone read, and then also read it out loud yourself.
Yeah, fantastic. And then just to close us out, are there any other, I mean, you've already offered some great bits of wisdom, but anything you'd want to pass on as a kind of bit of advice to current students or even prospective students?
I know this is going to probably sound very cheesy, but just believing in yourself, especially in the music world, in the artistic world, where there's always this idea of a competition, and then the imposter syndrome adding into it. I think just knowing that you are capable of doing things and believing in yourself will get you very far. And if you listen to the other voices, then that's where it gets more difficult. But it's just trying to know that you can do it. So that's always my advice. And make us the smart choices, whatever they are.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. This has been a really great conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really happy to have the opportunity to come back to Peabody whenever I can.